Hare Krishna, nice to meet you again. So I think in our last episode, we began with the first verse of the second chapter. And now we have Krishna speaking directly. So text 2, I'll chant the Sanskrit. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Kutastva Kashmalamidam Vishame Samupasthitam Translation, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Arjun, how have these impurities come upon you? They are not at all befitting a man who knows the value of life. They lead not to higher planets, but to infamy." Some discussion is required about the word Bhagavan. As if in India, people say, which Bhagwan do you worship? And our Bhagwan, sometimes they say Guru Bhagwan or Guru is Bhagwan. So friends, very clear. It's a very simple Sanskrit word. Bhaga stands for opulence. We have Sanskrit, Hindi, Gujarati, Marathi words like Bhagya. I mean, even in South Indian language, Bhagyam. So Bhagya is fortune. Mahabhag, greatly fortunate. Durbhagya, unfortunate. So Bhaga is opulence, somebody who is a possessor of Bhaga. Dhanavan, Gunavan. So Bhagavan is one who is the possessor. And then how many are these? So we have Vyasadeva, his father, the great Parashar Muni. Just see what an astute observer, what a deep meditator, and what a scientific definer he is. Aishwaryasya samagrasya viryasya yashasya shriya jnana vairashchidaschaiva shannam bhagaitingana. The great Parashar Muni is saying that wealth, knowledge, power, beauty, fame, and renunciation, these are six categories of opulences, resources, potencies, shaktis, call it whatever. For example, Albert Einstein, was he beautiful to look at, handsome? Was he on the model? I mean, a cover model for Vogue or for gentlemen? No. He had buddhi. Intellect was his opulence. Bill Gates, intellect. But some Miss Universe, her opulence is not intellect or physical power, but beauty. And there could be some Baba in some Himalayan cave right now, standing on one leg for the last 27 years, eating only roots and berries once a day. You say, gosh, what renunciation. So friends, I always, I mean, this is a favorite topic of mine. For those who feel that Gita, Mahabharata, Ramayana, is it not too far in the past, and how come they have anything which will touch my life today? So this, let this be your first litmus test. Here is a sadhu, a rishi, meditating in the Himalayas, staying in the forest, and giving a piece of knowledge that, hey world, hey intelligent people, there are only six things which are attractive in your life. You are attracted towards wealth, knowledge, physical power, physical beauty, fame, and renunciation. The passage of time has not added a seventh one, and the passage of time has not taken out one, and now, oh, now it's Kali Yuga, only five opulences are there. No. So check out in your life. Your beauty parlor will not have Einsteins and Niels Bohrs and Oppenheimers. They will have people with physical beauty. The universities will not have people with physical beauty. They will have portraits of people with intelligence. An ashram will have neither physical beauty nor physical fame, but with material renunciation. Now we come to the next level. So how come Indra Bhagavan, Chandra Bhagavan, Narada Bhagavan, Vyasa Bhagavan? So friends, at a general level, there are many personalities who are also addressed as Bhagavan. Then at the level of Srimad Bhagavatam, or in the case of the Gita here, Vyasadeva could have easily said, Shri Krishna Uvacha. No. He is making it very clear. This is Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. That is, a person who is in possession of all knowledge in the past, today, and tomorrow, that person is speaking. That's why in the purport, Prabhupada says, Krishna and the Supreme Personality of Godhead are identical. That is why he is referred to as Bhagavan throughout the Gita. A slightly technical topic, we'll go into detail later, but at least I would like to open the discussion now. A very easy to understand those three aspects of God realization are God as all-pervading, God as a localized person, and God as having a personality of his own. So this is explained by the example of the sun. There is sunshine. You say, where is the sun? Just look at the sunshine, it's available. Yeah, that means the sun is up there. Like right now in Mumbai, it is cloudy all along. But still it is daytime. It's only 3:45 in the afternoon. And I can easily say that the sun is there, although I can't see the sun. Higher than that is the sun's surface. That means now we have some telescope or whatever, we are examining the sun's surface. Or we can localize, in a localized way, point out the sun on the horizon. And then the discussion goes much deeper into the sun planet. All the intricacies and all the detail about what happens there. So, to put it simply, a beginner student understands God as all-pervading. An intermediate student understands God as all-pervading plus a localized representation like the Paramatma. And the advanced student realizes God as all-pervading, the localized Paramatma, and then the personality of Godhead itself. So this is the purport of Krishna just entering the discussion and saying that, hey Arjun, how have these impurities come upon you? So we will tackle what these impurities are before I hand it over to you, if you have to add anything about our first point of discussion as Bhagavan.
I remember many, many years ago, I had gone to one, you can call it as an ashram or temple.
Mm.
And there was a big alley, and this Bhagwan Ganesh, Bhagwan Parvati, Bhagwan Shiv, Bhagwan Surya, all that in series. And finally, there was a mirror. And underneath was written, here is the real Bhagwan.
Oh, wow.
So as you started your discussion on the subject matter of Bhagwan, I was just thinking, yeah, here particularly in this land, you know, this Bhagwan, that Bhagwan, Guru Bhagwan, you know, we have so many these things. But lastly, it arises because of not having proper understanding and you know, clarity. So you very nicely quoted Parashar Muni's definition, word Bhagwan. It puts everything in context. Who is he? Who is all powerful, all beautiful like that? So, yes, Prabhupada gives a very beautiful purport about it on the subject matter. So, this is just a point I wanted to add on the subject matter, Bhagavan.
Okay, I would like to move on a slightly deeper level. Very common request in India, at least, that if you claim the Gita is scientific, spiritual life is scientific, can't we have a scientific definition of God? Like gold had its purity levels, 24 karat, 22, 18. But 24 karat means the highest purity level. So can that be applied in theology? So the first understanding is the definition given by Parashar Muni. We have one more equally powerful definition. And again, Prabhupada quotes it in his explanation here. Ishvaraha Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadiradir Govinda Sarvakarana Karanam. So Ishvara means a controller. Now, again, a favorite episode in my life, I used to work on the BGT Marathi translation team and used to work sometimes late night. And often I would find an insect no more than my comma or full stop, which I would make with my pen. And this guy is merrily walking on the page. And I would feel as if, you know, hey, what if I just blow? This guy would have no existence now. I mean, I didn't even know he existed. Right now I'm seeing him on my paper. And since it's night and the table lamp glowing very, very, very brilliantly, so I could see on that spotless white paper this small insect walking. I would poke him with my ballpoint pen, not so much as to torture him. And then he would stop. Enemy, enemy. And he's feigning that he's dead. And I like to tell him, hey, buddy, I know you're faking death. And according to his brain, as to how long he could remain, maybe 20 seconds, 25 seconds, and he starts walking again. So I was thinking, I can control his life. I can control his death. I can do anything. Look how powerful I am. After doing this for 2-3 occasions, one day this real shocker came to me that what if I am like this insect to someone who's watching me commute in Mumbai city, take a train, come here, happy, sad, jumping, morose, whatever. And if I live or I die, for that person it is nothing. And therefore I just was thinking that, hey, in one sense we are all Ishwaras, which is a fact. I control my plane seat, I control my train seat. I am having this job here, no one can take away this job from me. Or I am a CEO, I have 2,546 people reporting to me. Whoa, whoa, very good. I am Jeff Bezos, I am Elon Musk, I am Steve Jobs, I am whatever. We need to understand that controllers we all are. But can somebody say that I control everyone? That's half the statement. And no one controls me. That's not possible. So even those who defy any theological aspect of life, there is death which comes as a stopper on all activities. So here is something, two words, Ishwaraha Paramaha. That means there is no more, nobody equal, nobody above. He is called Krishna, very clearly mentioned, this is Brahma Samhita. Sat Chit Ananda Vigraha, his body is eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. Anadir, and he doesn't have a cause, he doesn't have a beginning. Adir, he is the beginning of everyone else. Govindaha is the primal Lord Govinda. Sarva Karana Karanam, there is a karan, there is a cause for everything. He is the cause of all causes. Like to add something to this?
I guess I'm just loving the discussion.
So the final one, again, Prabhupada is very careful. I mean, these three definitions are quite sufficient. We begin with Parashar Muni's thing. Then we have the Brahma Samhita, Brahmaji's definition. And now something from the Bhagavatam, first canto, third chapter, 28th verse. Ete cham shakala pumsa, Krishnastu Bhagavan swayam, Indrari Vyakulam Lokam Nridayanti Yuge Yuge. There is a list of incarnations given in the Puranas, Mahabharata, especially Bhagavatam. Again, another topic. People say, so there are 10 incarnations of Vishnu, correct? We say yes and no. Why no? Because there are only 10. Incarnations are as countless as the waves on a rivulet or a river or a reservoir of water. So in the Bhagavatam, very clearly it is said, all the lists of the incarnations of God described here are either expansions, full expansions, or parts of plenary expansions of Krishna. But Krishna is described as the Godhead himself. So, Krishna is Supreme Lord, the Absolute Truth, the source of Super Soul, and the all-pervading light, which people say, oh, that is God. God is light, of course. So much so for just describing this one word, Bhagavan. Now we come to what this Bhagavan is demanding from Arjun. And hey, Arjun, why are you lamenting? So it's like, you may say, hey, like a parent may chide a small child, where did you learn this language? That means it was not from this house. It's not from your school, not from your teachers. So was there any other influence? So where did you get this mood of lamenting? I am your friend and you're supposed to take guidance from me. But instead of that, you're just going on and on and on with your mental speculation. Then Krishna used a word, which I will hand over to you because you have some interest. Arjun, you're not walking or talking or behaving like an Arya. What do you say, Prabhu?
Hey, Krishna. So yes, we read through this. Pretty interesting. Looks like Krishna is having a little surprised look at his face. How come these impurities have come from you? You seemed so confident when you came to meet my Dwarka. I mean, the option was given to both of you, and I just said, I'm not going to fight. You can have me unarmed, and you can have my army.
Yeah.
And Arjuna, without a blink of an eye, you immediately picked for me. You invited me. I traveled so far away from Dwarka to Kurukshetra. And now after coming here, you're crying in front of me and saying, I'm not going to fight. What has gone wrong with you? So in that state, this whole statement is opening up here. And some very interesting things are being said and will be said as we read further. So first, Krishna expresses surprise how these impurities have come upon you. And then Krishna says, it doesn't suit somebody who is an Aryan. And Krishna uses the word here, an Arya, like this. An Arya Jushtam. So what is this Aryan actually? That's what I wanted to have a discussion, because we have been taught and fed supposedly a concocted Aryan invasion theory, which has kind of made us feel that all the Sanskrit culture, all this Vedic culture, was actually brought to this land of Bharatbhumi from outsiders or by outsiders. It doesn't belong to us. You know, it was brought in here by some those who migrated 3,500 or 2,500 years ago, approximately. And that's what. So we have been deprived of our own culture by saying that the culture that we claim to be ours is in fact a foreign culture. And that leads to a lot of identity crisis in the youth or the people today, where they cannot identify who they belong to, what they belong to. Because what we thought, we grew up in a culture worshiping Krishna Rama. In fact, it is taught to us in school. Well, this is also not yours. This was brought to you, to this land, by the Europeans. So any comments on this Aryan invasion theory?
All right. Now we have one of our scholarly devotees, Dr. Edwin Bryant. He's wrote a book on that. And I would be happy to share more detailed knowledge if somebody in the audience wants to know. But Right now, it would be suffice to say that Europeans come to India, they kind of stumble on this great vast subcontinent. There was no plan in the minds of European rulers that, okay, we'll go to this, in this direction, you come from that direction and they will conquer it. They came as traders. And there is historical evidence that the continent was weakened by a lot of divisive forces. And we do have Ramanujacharya and Madhvacharya, two powerful personalities, but their role was mainly spiritual, right? So, or even if you go to Shankaracharya, he kind of made a well-knit spiritual organization in India. He revived the Kumbh Mela so that all Sanatan Dharmis can come together, and the temple worship was regulated. So let's say Shankaracharya 7th century, Ramanujacharya 10th century, Madhvacharya 11th century. For a particular reason, they laid the spiritual foundation, and they didn't dabble too much into either politics or political thought, and for a very good reason. So by the time the British kind of consolidated their grip over the whole subcontinent, there was this question that, you know, if this civilization was so great, how did it falter? What went wrong? If we had Dhanurved, then we could have fought the invaders, but we didn't. One understanding is, this is a big lesson in not following the orders of the Acharya. A few kings followed and they had success. Like we have Ranjit Singh, we have Shivaji Maharaj. So Shivaji Maharaj had spiritual guidance, and he also had martial guidance. And he didn't mix both of them. So a very convenient way of teaching Indians that you fail because this culture was never yours. So where did it come from? Oh, it came from somewhere in Europe. So isn't Sanskrit the mother of all languages? A half yes, but a full no. So they call something called the PIE, the Proto-Indo-European language, as even the mother of Sanskrit. Otherwise, brother and bhratra, daughter and dohitra, father, pitra, mother, matra. You can't escape the comparison that how come this language, which is say 3,500 years older than current languages, even Latin even, now they didn't have the stomach to digest that Latin comes from Sanskrit or is influenced by Sanskrit. So with the British education system, like I think safely to say 1820, so like four generations there, 6 to 7 generations of Indian intelligentsia was breastfed with this Putana's milk of Aryan invasion theory and Aryan Dravidian divide and whatnot. So now things have come to a full circle that many scholars are trying to understand that, hey, this theory is good as a theory, but doesn't hold water. So I'm not going into a fanatical mode. I'm trying to see how Prabhupada said, all right, whatever has happened has happened. If we had kind of a pride before and then we lost, things can't be again rectified by becoming proud again. But what is the mood of the Aryan culture? Is that the best of knowledges should be distributed without discrimination. And that's what Prabhupada did. So in the context of Arjuna here, cowardice, especially when faced with duty, when there is a duty which you are supposed to do, then the act of cowardice is befitting non-Aryans. So it's a deviation from duty and does not help one in progress of spiritual life. And Prabhupada makes it very plain here. Nor does it give any opportunity to become famous in this world. Not famous for fame's sake, but fame is one which endures. Like you may say that somebody is gone, but his name endures. And many social welfare projects and university, they're all kind of depend on the good name of a person, isn't it?
Correct.
Like Stanford or whatever, these names are to perpetuate the legacy of someone. So therefore, Krishna is not approving this so-called compassion of Arjuna for his blood relations.
So would it be wise to say, as we started our discussion of the chapter, Aryan civilization refers to the Vedic viewpoint that we are now the body alone, but we are a spirit soul, and
yes,
harmonize the needs of both. And the Anaryan civilization is a current viewpoint which had been there for probably a century or more, that we are only the body. And we see things limited from the perspective of body needs. Would that be a fair enough discussion? Because Arjuna's all causes of lamentation largely were based on bodily identification, compassion, enjoyment, fear of sin, fear of destruction of family traditions. It was all because of the body identification. Would that be correct?
Yes. So, in on itself, social welfare projects and all things have to be protected. But Krishna is saying here, what if your duty comes in between, then you have to do your duty as a warrior. You have to fight for dharma. The other side, having like glittering good qualities, but it is all spoiled by their stance on dharma. They don't care what dharma is. And I do care. And I am standing with you and I am giving you knowledge. I am equipping you with everything. Arjun, this is a surgery on the tumor of the social body. I am the surgeon. You are the scalpel. Just act like an instrument and take the credit.
So a fantastic verse. Two main themes we discussed, Bhagawan and Prabhupada gives, and as discussed by Prabhuji brilliantly, three levels of realization. Then what is Bhagawan, and then what is Ishwar, who is the source of everything, and then a doubt arises, who among the Vishnu is the topmost, Ethi Tamsa Kalahapamsa. So all the four levels of discussion happen just while introducing this word Bhagawan, and then we had our second discussion about this Aryan, Anaryan. What does it mean to be Aryan? Because Hitler declared himself to be Aryan. So no, Aryan means having a spiritual viewpoint, and Anaryan means only having a body identification of viewpoint. And along with that, we also discussed something on Aryan invasion theory, how we have been best fed some wrong information just to destroy our identity, our origin of our culture. The great wealth that we have received as a heritage, which unfortunately people today don't want to accept it. That's a strange thing. But now things have changed because the Prime Minister of the country is moving around and gifting a copy of Bhagavad Gita to others.
Yeah.
Thinking, oh, he's gifting to others, that we should also read it. So, anything else on this, Prabhuji? All right. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you.